Feelings of Mentality, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Hello, this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth on KPFK and WPFW, sitting in for regular host Brian DeShazer for this special edition of From the Vault. On this edition of From the Vault, we turn the clock back to 1993 when Pacifica Radio devoted an entire day to recognize Black August, the annual commemoration of the liberation struggles of African-American political prisoners, including the killing of prisoner George Jackson on August 21, 1971. Several producers conducted then-current interviews and played Pacifica Radio archive recordings of George Jackson. The producers focused on the treatment of prisoners and of the human and civil rights abuses documented during prisoners' extended stays in solitary confinement at the four Supermax prisons in California. California is currently facing an ongoing hunger strike from prisoners protesting the living conditions they are subjected to. August 8th marked 1 month of the hunger strike, making this the longest prisoner hunger strike in California's history. Later, we have comments from Los Angeles Times journalist Paige St. John, who's been covering California's current prison crisis. We now present highlights from the 1993 Black August special.
This camp brings out the very best in brothers or destroys them entirely. But none are unaffected. None who leave here are normal. If I leave here alive, I leave nothing behind. They never count me among the broken men. But I can't say that I'm normal either. I've been hungry too long, I've gotten angry too often, I've been lied to and insulted too many times. They've pushed me over the line, from which there can be no retreat.
That was the voice of Soledad brother George Jackson, followed by Archie Shepp's Blues for George Jackson. This is your Black August commemoration produced by Kilu Nyasha. I'm Dina Nyasha Smith, and I'll be your host as we bring you the history of Black August. On August 7, 1970, 17-year-old Jonathan Jackson spearheaded an aborted attempt to free the Soledad brothers, including Jonathan's brother, Black Panther leader George Jackson, and to draw world attention to the plight of black and oppressed prisoners. On August 21, 1971, George Jackson was murdered at San Quentin Prison in what authorities describe as an escape attempt and what comrades believed was an assassination conspiracy by the state. Since then, the month of August has been designated Black August in honor of these heroic freedom fighters. Tonight, we bring you the truth that has been omitted from the pages of recent history, the stories of George and Jonathan Jackson and Ruchelle Sinque McGee, sole survivor of the Courthouse Slave Rebellion, archival tapes of conversations with Hugo L.A. Pinel, the only member of the San Quentin Six still being held in one of California's gulags, and Ruchelle McGee, both of whom are held in the torture chamber at Pelican Bay State Prison, and conversations with the Soledad brothers, John Cluche, Fleeta Drumgo, and George Jackson. An interview with three of the San Quentin Six, David Johnson, Luis Talamantes, and Willie Sundiata Tate. You'll also hear from Mumia Abu-Jamal, Sheba Haben, named journalist Alice Yarish, Kumasi and Ron Wilkins, and the Live Lines, with music from Sweet Henny and the Rock, Freedom Troop 187, Tupac Shakur, the Isley Brothers, Marvin Gaye, Gil Scott-Heron, Steel Pulse, and our special musical guest, the Bay Area's own Aman La Poets. So stay tuned to Black August commemoration.
This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Fortunately, Mumia sent the text of his Black August commentary well in advance to Kilu. Unfortunately, the recorded version was not delivered in time for tonight's Black August commemoration. So here's Solomon Hill reading Mumia's Black August.
August, in both historic and contemporary African American history, is a month of meaning. It is a month of repression. August 1619, the first group of black laborers, called indentured servants, landed at Jamestown, Virginia. August 25th, 1967. Classified FBI memos went out to all bureaus nationwide with plans to, quote, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, or otherwise neutralize black liberation movement groups. August 1968, the Newark, New Jersey Black Panther Party office was firebombed. August 25th, 1968, LA Black Panther Party members Steve Bartholomew, Robert Lawrence, and Tommy Lewis were murdered by the LAPD at a gas station. August 15th, 1969, Sylvester Bell, San Diego Black Panther Party, murdered by the US organization. August 21st, 1971, Black Panther Party Field Marshal George L. Jackson assassinated at San Quentin Prison, California. Three guards and two inmate turncoats killed, three wounded. August is also a month of radical resistance. August 22nd, 1831, Nat Turner's Rebellion rocked Southampton County, Virginia, and the entire South when slaves rose up and slew their white masters. August 30th, 1856, John Brown led an anti-slavery raid on a group of Missourians at Osawatomie, Kansas. August 7th, 1970, Jonathan Jackson, younger brother of Field Marshal George Jackson, raided the Marin County Courthouse in California, arming and freeing three black prisoners, taking the judge, prosecutor, and several jurors hostage. All except one prisoner were killed by police fire that perforated the escape vehicle. John was 17. And in an instance of resistance and repression, August 8th, 1978, after a 15-month armed police standoff with the Philadelphia Naturalist MOVE organization, the police raided MOVE, killing one of their own in police crossfire and charging nine MOVE people with murder. The MOVE nine in prisons across Pennsylvania are serving up to 100 years each. August, a month of injustice and divine justice, of repression and righteous rebellion, of individual and collective efforts to free the slaves and break the chains that bind us. August saw slaves and the grandchildren of slaves strike out for their God-given right to freedom, as well as the awesome price, the ultimate price always paid by those who would dare oppose the slave master's will. Like their spiritual grandfather, the blessed rebel Nat Turner, those who opposed Massa in this land of unfreedom met murder by the state. George and Jonathan Jackson, James McLean, William Christmas, Bobby Hutton, Steve Bartholomew, Robert Lawrence, Tommy Lewis, Sylvester Bell, all suffered the fate of Nat Turner, of the slave daring to fight the slave master for his freedom. Their sacrifice, their despair, their determination, and their blood has painted the month black for all time. Let their revolutionary sacrifice not be forgotten nor taken in vain.
Growing up as an inner city brother, wherever you ever had a pops and a mother, I was the product of a heated lover. Nobody knew how deep it screwed me. And since my pops never knew me, my family didn't know what to do with me. Was I somebody they despised? Curious look in their eyes as if they wondered if I'm dead or alive. Oh, mama can't control me. Quit trying to save my soul. I want to grow with my homies. A ticket time bomb. Ain't nobody paid me. Back in the 380 and beamed it from the stage. Suck a scatter, but it don't matter. I'm a cool shot. From all the books I said fools got, I'm tired of being a nice guy. I've been poor my life, but don't know quite why. So they label me a lunatic, could care less. Death or success is what I quest, cause I'm fearless. Now the street is out, death row. Down like it ain't nothing. The street is like death row.
You're listening to highlights from Pacifica's 1993 Black August national broadcast on From the Vault.
We will not bow down to a high racism. Yeah. We will not bow down to
injustice.
We will not bow down to exploitation.
What you gonna do?
I'm gonna stand.
The capitalist Eden fits my description of hell. To destroy it, it will require cooperation and communion between our related parts. Communion between colony and colony, nation and nation. International coordination is the key to defeating this thing that must expand to live. Our inability to work with other peoples, other slaves who have the same master, is a consequence of the inferiority complex we have been conditioned into. We are afraid the Chinese or the white folks who supported socialism and liberation really just want to use us, trick us. This paranoia is a carryover from the days when a white face and a black crowd meant that the white brain was controlling things. It is a carryover from the days when that some of us felt that nothing could function properly without the presence of a white brain. When we were sufficiently convinced of our own inferiority to allow them to take us over, we must overcome the paranoia. We need allies. We have a powerful enemy who cannot be defeated without an allied effort.
From Soledad, Brother, The Prison Letters of George Jackson.
Double Max, San Quentin. The principal contradiction between oppressor and oppressed can be reduced to the fact that the only way the oppressor can maintain his position is by fostering, nurturing, building contempt for the oppressed. That thing gets out of hand after a while. It leads to the excesses that we see, and the excesses that are growing within the totalitarian state here. The excesses breed resistance, of course. The thing grows in a spiral. It can end in only one way. The excesses lead to resistance. The resistance lead to brutality. The brutality really leads to more resistance. And finally, the whole question will be resolved with either the uneconomic or the end of oppression, the end of economic man. And must be fed. It grows in spirals. Confrontations, and I mean on all levels. Have to be assaulted. We don't have to contrive any. The particular thought by Huey Newton and the party, Huey and David and June, Pat Goliot, and the rest of the comrades around the country. We're working with Erica and Bobby. The prison movement in general, the movement to prove to the establishment that the concentration camp technique won't work on us, not in the 1970s. We don't have to contrive any importance to our particular movement. It's a very real, very, very real issue. And I'm of the opinion that right along with the student movement, right along with the old familiar workers' movement, that the prison movement, you know, substructural to the whole thing, you know, on a whole, does have strong relevance to the whole question, the movement in general.
Solidarity, brother, George.
Yeah.
Solidarity, brother, malicious, unjust society. He became revolutionary. Jackson.
We're something like 40 to 42% of the prison population, perhaps more, since I'm relying on material published by the media. These prisons have borne a certain resemblance to Dachau and Buchenwald, places for the bad niggas, Mexicans, and poor whites. But the last 10 years have brought an increase in the percentage of blacks for crimes that can clearly be traced to political economic causes. There are still some blacks here who consider themselves criminals, but not many. Believe me, my friend, with the time incentive that these brothers have to read, study, and think, you will find no class or category more aware, more embittered, desperate, or dedicated to the ultimate remedy, revolution. The most dedicated, the best of our kind, you'll find them in the Folsoms, San Quentins, and Soledads. They live like there's no tomorrow, and for most of them, there isn't. Somewhere along the line, they sense this. Life on the installment plan, 3 years of prison, 3 years of parole, then back to start all over again. Parole officers have sent brothers back to the joint for selling newspapers, the Black Panther paper. Their official reason is failure to maintain gainful employment.
Well, we're all familiar with the function of the prison as an institution within the totalitarian state. We have to destroy that function. That function has to no longer be viable. It's one of the strongest institutions that supports the totalitarian state. We have to destroy it. We have to destroy its effectiveness. And that's what the prison movement is all about. What I'm saying is that they put us in concentration camps. All right. But there'll be no peace in a concentration camp. None whatsoever. I'm saying that it's impossible to concentration camp resistors. For example, we can go back a little distance, the internments during World War II. Let's go forward to the strategic hamlet and all the various means of concentrating populations to better control or to eliminate, liquidate, isolate the dynamic sections of the movement, the protagonists in the movement. We have to prove that thing won't work here. And the only way to prove it is resistance once inside. And then that resistance has to be supported, of course, from the street. As we understood that the function of the prison within the prison state, within the police state, has to be explained, has to be elucidated, has to be gotten across to the people on the street, because we can't fight them alone. And you know, we can fight, but the results are usually not they're not conducive to proving our point. You know that that this thing won't work on us. From inside, we fight and we die, but that's not the point. The point is, in the new phase of war, is to fight and win.
That was George Jackson speaking with KPFA's Karen Wald. This is Black August Commemoration 93. Coming up, sister station KPFK's Ron Wilkins with Kumasi.
It was during the month of August, on the 21st, that George Jackson, legendary teacher, author, and field marshal of the Black Panther Party, was murdered by California authorities in a disproven prison escaped attempt at San Quentin. George's younger brother, Jonathan, had fallen on August 7th of the preceding year as he blazed his way into the Marin County Courthouse and into history during a day of heroic revolutionary endeavors. As the 1960s neared an end, more attention came to be focused on the struggles of black prisoners, particularly in California, A major reason for this was the case brought early in 1969 against the Soledad brothers. The Soledad brothers were three black prison inmates accused of killing a white prison guard. Many black prisoners had become politicized during confinement. A good number of them were victims of legal railroading and repeated parole denials because of their unbroken resolve. A few of these languished in the hold or solitary confinement for major portions of long sentences. George Jackson was one such prisoner. Uncounted men on the inside and cadres at large on the outside loved George and drew inspiration from his teachings and his example. No less can be said of the unrivaled courage and seldom matched example of Jonathan Jackson as well. Though I never met George, my thoughts and words in relation to him have always been from the standpoint of a comrade. One bitter memory of those times is how certain white left attorneys, book authors, and publishers line their pockets and base their claim to fame on knowledge of or association with George Jackson. As we pause and pay tribute to George and Jonathan Jackson, we also salute their family and wish them well. I am proud to say that together with Malcolm X, George and Jonathan top my list of examples who have fallen in the cause of black liberation. A fellow inmate, himself possessing an impressive record of struggle, recalls George Jackson.
I have a plan. I will give and give and give of myself until it proves our making or my end. The men of our group have developed as a result of living under a ruthless system, a set of mannerisms that numb the soul. We have been floor mat of the world, but the world has yet to see what can be done by men of our nature, by men who have walked the path of disparity, of regression, of abortion, and yet come out whole. There will be a special page in the book of life for the men who have crawled back from the grave. This page will tell of utter defeat, ruin, passivity, and subjection in one breath, and in the next, overwhelming victory and fulfillment. Those were the words of George Jackson, written in a letter to his mother, March 3, 1966. August 21st, 1971. It was sometime during the afternoon, between 2 o'clock and 4:30. I was in the adjustment center at Folsom State Prison. 4A was the name of it then, and it was California's most maximum security housing unit for uncontrollable prisoners. We were revolutionaries, locked away from the general population, isolated indefinitely because of our intentions to change American domestic and foreign policy by waging war against racism, oppression, and the brutal exploitation of man by man from within the confines of capitalism's ugliest creations, its prisons. Commotion began downstairs, beneath us on the first floor. There was shouting, banging of the bars. Men were yelling through the air vents. The word was being passed throughout the building. The message was unbelievable, shocking, causing silence, disbelief, and grabbing the attention of each and every one of us. Listen to the radio, came the message again. They've interrupted the World Series game. Something's gone down at San Quentin. They say George is dead. Actually, the number of deaths in that day's incident came to 6. 3 guards and 2 white inmates, who had at some time or another taken sides with the guards, were killed before George actually died. But within 24 hours of George's death, the office of the Department of Corrections in Sacramento, the state capital, had been bombed. The desk sergeant at Ingleside Police Station had been shotgunned to death inside the station. There were small arms attacks against the police in several cities from the Bay Area to Los Angeles, where sales of militant revolutionaries struck blow after blow against the establishment in retaliation of the death of George Jackson. And yet no one felt that George had sufficiently enough been revenged. True, he had not. There were still other reactions to come before the year's end. September 9th, the takeover of Attica State Prison started with the wearing of black armbands by prisoners who were still mourning and protesting the murder of George Jackson 19 days after its occurrence. And as much as 2 years later, the California Department of Corrections had to lock down all its prisons at the same time because a guard in Tracy had been killed, and a list of guards to be killed all over the state in its various prisons had been found. This, too, was a reaction to the state murder of George Jackson, and the reactions did not stop there.
This is From the Vault, presented by the Pacifica Radio Archives. For more information or to order a copy of this program, call the archives at 1-800-735-0230. And now back to our program.
Who was this man? Who exactly was George Jackson? And what was he like? Why have men killed for him, died for him, and rotted in the darkest corners of prisons for the rest of their lives, fearing no one and nothing, and even when condemned to complete isolation forever, with no human contact except the guards who watch over them every hour of the day? Why do they refuse to break character? Why do they live out the legacy of George Jackson, internalizing his spirit until the end? And why is he not to be spoken about? Why is his name so hushed up, so unmentionable? George was a complete man. There was nothing about George that any of us has to stand here and make apologies for today. I am not sorry that he never compromised his own manhood, and that he never compromised anyone else's. He never sold out, never sunk to his knees in front of his enemies and begged for clemency or a second chance. And when face to face with death, as he came many, many times before he actually died, he never asked to be spared. George Jackson was in character, the kind of man who inspired others to be more than just run-of-the-mill types themselves. He didn't demand this. When you were in his presence, you demanded the best man and yourself stand up and be counted. There's a difference between standing so tall over other men that you make them feel small, so small that they want to hide themselves or else stand in the open and look like a bunch of nothings, and standing so tall amongst other men that they all try to make a straight line and stand in rank at equal heights, no one allowing a break in the formation. And standing together like this, all of the men in this file feel as if nothing and no one can break them. No one can defeat or put down what they stand for. The combination of intelligence, intellectual brilliance, physical strength and aptitude, courage, the kind of steadfastness that saw him never lose ground, never give an inch, his ability to formulate the best plan, and the fact that he was unquestionably dependable made him decisively a leader among the strongest men in California and perhaps the whole country. That is, if you measure men by the pound instead of some guessing Gallup poll. And when I say measure men by the pound, I mean if given the same identical set of conditions and circumstance, if you had been able to put Napoleon on the big yard at San Quentin with the kind of men I'm talking about, neither he, Hitler, nor Colonel North would have lasted long enough to talk about, let alone emerge as historical heroes. If this country can call a man hero who in one instance calls Abu Nidal the world's leading assassin and terrorist and says, I'll be glad to face you anywhere on earth, man to man on equal terms, then in the next instance tries to break for cover in his attorney's vest pocket just because of some little commotion in the back room, after he has designed himself the blueprint for death of many already downtrodden people because they have taken up the cry for freedom but didn't choose the so-called freedom he himself had to offer, then it's not hard to see why George Jackson is not to be spoken about today.
Why, it's because he's unbelievable in comparison. The American public does not know what a real hero is anymore, and that's one of the reasons I am here today to mention George Jackson and to bring back his memory. This is the month of August, Black August, if you will. It is the month that we lost Jonathan Jackson, George's 17-year-old brother, who in the boldest rescue attempt of the 1970s, at least the boldest in this country, gave his life for his brother George and for other comrades of George that Jonathan did not even personally know. Among them, the heroic William Christmas, James McClain, and the only survivor on our side, the heroic and articulate legal mastermind, Rochelle McGee. It is the month that Katari, George's successor, lost his life in San Quentin. And so because so many tragedies occurred in this one single month, and whether it is known or not, the so-called Watts Rebellion of 1965 that did not end before the loss of 37 lives and 4,000 arrests, and the 1831 August 21st uprising that was launched by Nat Turner and his six Confederates, who by themselves overwhelmed their slave masters and liberated for a time hundreds of other slaves and led them in a baptismal bloodbath. This month surely deserves the name, if we look at it in its historical perspective, as Black August. In conclusion, let us remember George Jackson. Let us internalize his strength and fear neither the truth nor living nor dying. Let us at least once a year take time out to pay tribute to those still living and to those of you who still carry on. You can tell your tormentors what George told them. Hurled me into the next existence. I will crawl back from the grave and dog your trail into the hereafter. And I say to you myself that if each generation does not produce another George Jackson, let it produce at least someone among us who will remind the world of him. Long live the gorilla.
You're listening to highlights from Pacifica's 1993 Black August national broadcast on From the Vault.
Now truly, what does it mean to kill a man of color? Not much, did you see they always kill each other? And if it ain't them doing themselves over rocks, it's a beer, the wine, and the facts, why cops? The money you make in your religion means nothing. You'll be the one the way that they're cuffing. Piling a passive, it doesn't mean a damn thing. Cause they killed Malcolm X and Dr. King. Go inside, you're on the wrong one. Hard looking for a second and you're gone, son. Cause in the land of the free, you got no rights. Whether you're living in Compton or Crown Heights, so think about it next time you leave your house. And in the street with the cops playing cat and mouse. You can have your law degree, understand? But to society, it don't mean it to kill a black man.
Now tell me, why is this motherfucker so hard to understand why this nigga's in the graveyard pushing up daisies, driving me crazy? But the whole thing doesn't seem to amaze me, cause I understand this, this is not new, and I'm not trying to come off like a prophet. Red and blue lights in my rear view mirror, a blue silhouette in the thick of the deer. Stop with this ticket book, giving me a dirty look. Nigga, where you going? Looking like a pickup crook. So I sit and attempt to look drunk, so he don't pop my dome full of dum-dums. Should have ran my way before he tried to take high low. He'd have known I'm the type to cause a bullet hole. It's just part of the master plan. The truth understand.
What does it mean
to kill a black man?
Police, eat a dick straight up, you know why?
Freedom.
him a death is what's left of the black man. High low, pull a clip out the gap, man, and reload for the suckers that never flowed and never knew 187's a code. For real equality, so follow me until the wicked wins. Or watch supremacy, that's when the freedom begins. You wanna get mine, fool, you'll get flatlined by the black mind behind my fat gat. 9mm hollow tips that don't slip, money grip, cause high low will have your throat slit, and half-stepping young brothers get they ass straight beat. Fucking with the troops elite, you got to bitch up a hip hop and DJ Rob, and high lows in the house to do the job. That's why I say we gotta counterattack, man, cause the society don't make issues to kill a black man.
Thank you, Mr. President.
They said we were gorillas in the mist. When the troops saw the stolen news we got, hey, this I'm not a caveman, motherfucker, clansman, you looking at the first. So who are you to diss about yourself? I know you don't feel good, so you shake me down with a badge or a white hood. Try that ish in 92, G. Quincy, you'll do your autopsy. Now this ain't a threat, it's a promise. DJ Robin the Bishop will be my accomplice. And taking the truth won't be easy, like that bullshit you tried to Tuskegee. Now AIDS is a man-made weapon, so check under your belt before you keep stepping. It's all part of the master plan, the truth understands.
What does it mean
to kill a black man?
Here is Georgia B. Jackson, interviewed by Karen Wald, following the death of her two sons, George and Jonathan Jackson. The interview was conducted on September 29th, 1971.
They didn't call at all to tell me he was dead.
How did you hear?
On the radio. I heard it on the radio.
You were sitting at home with your husband? And,
I was at home. My daughter turned the radio on, and that's what we heard.
When did you first contact the prison, and what did they say to you?
Last night. I called them last night several times, trying to get some information. But I was told they didn't want to talk to me, and that I couldn't have his body until they were finished with it. And I couldn't have his personal possessions until they're finished with those. And I don't see why they need his personal possessions, his papers and his writings and his anything that he has in there belongs to me.
They actually said we refused to tell you anything or what?
That's what he said. Park said he didn't want to talk to me. He didn't want to see me.
I
asked him because I thought he was the one in authority and he's the one that should know what happened. I asked other people who answered the phone and they wouldn't talk either.
The last time you saw George was on Thursday, right?
Thursday week.
How was he then and what did he say to you?
He was all right, except that he was feared for his life.
What did he actually say?
He said they're trying to kill him.
What indications, specific indications, did he have that they were trying to kill him?
The guards passed by his door and make threats. The guard passed by his door and told him he only had 2 weeks to live. And they meant it. It was 2 weeks exactly, almost.
What do you think happened with the other three guards? Or with the three guards who were killed?
We don't know what was going on in the prison. We don't ever know what goes on in the prison. They didn't even call me and tell me he was dead. So how would we know? But I do know that he had sense enough not to run for a place that he couldn't get out of. He wasn't crazy. And that doesn't make sense. All they have to say is they accidentally shot him and get away with it. They don't have to make up all these fantastic lies. They have the power. They have the authority to do what they want to do. Now, they don't need to make up fantastic lies. They could just say he was accidentally killed and there wouldn't be nothing done. Like there won't be nothing done now. We know that. We're used to being treated like that. It's not new. We're treated like that from the time we were born. Nobody cares. And I can't help if it hurts people's feelings. It's the truth. There's no need whitewashing this stuff. It's time people came out and told the truth about it. And I am tired of these people at the prison trying to hang some kind of dirty rap on me because I've always carried myself with dignity at that prison and been treated like a dog every time I went up there. Snub, you go up and ask one of them something, they'll turn their head off like this and answer you. Won't even look at you to talk to you. Things like that are wrong. How long can people put up with these things? That's what
Jackson,
I'd rather see him dead than dragging his head and bowing his head and crying and sitting on the corner, an old man, 70 years old, with no hope and nothing else. He's better off dead. If he died like that, but I want them exposed. I want these people in the prisons exposed. Because it's time they were exposed.
Mrs. Jackson, you've lost two sons under violent circumstances.
That's what the guard said to me last night. We killed one of your sons last year. We got another one this year. You pretty soon won't have any sons left. And left.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah.
Father. Once again, Amandla Poets.
Sanye, Sanye River call. Diva, diva, willy kapulim la, diva, diva ni la fako no.
Aho la senye, 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 aho. La senye, aho, 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 la senye, aho,
La Senye,
Aho, La Senye, Aho, La Senye, Aho, La Senye, Aho, La Senye,
Aho, La Senye,
Aho,
La Senye,
Aho,
La Senye, Aho, La Senye, Aho, La Senye,
Aho,
La Senye, Aho, La Senye, Aho, La Senye, Aho, La Senye, Aho, La Senye, Aho, La Senye, Aho.
Soledad brothers, embrace yourselves to have spring to a maggot, then fly away, protruding through the earth, scenting and depolluting the minds of diaspora. Yours has been a plight of certainty, relented by uncertainty, but maladies, unchained melodies of the future, inspired by butterflies. March through the prairie, saluting the ancestry, showering their ears with tidings, engulfing the betrayed lands. Freedom and justice is always in the air. Amanja.
The San Quentin Six case became one of the longest, most renowned trials in California history. Soledad brother Fleeta Drumgo, David Johnson, Hugo L.A. Pinel, Luis Talamantes, and Willie Sundiata Tate were all indicted on charges of murder, conspiracy, and assault in the wake of the August 21, 1971 incident that took the lives of three guards, two tier tenders, and comrade George Jackson. Kilu Nyasha interviewed three of the six, David, Luis, and Sundiata.
The thing is, if we give a good account of ourselves under these conditions, then they'll think twice about just trying to run over people. See, the whole question and focus around our struggle was this. Even though we are in prison, we are human beings. And because we're in prisons, don't give these guards the right to treat us less than human beings. That's what this struggle was all about. Human rights.
Right.
We're human beings, and irregardless of what we've done wrong, we expect to be treated as human beings. And that's something that wasn't being done. And it's not being done. Pelican Bay is an example.
Right.
Of, you know.
Beastly.
It is. You don't treat him. You know, if you're trying to help somebody, you know, you don't put them in conditions that turn them into animals.
Well, you know, the California prison system doesn't even pretend to help anybody or rehabilitate anyone anymore. It's all about punishment.
That's what
it's more
monsters.
But punishment isn't the word for what they do. It's torture, because Pelican Bay is a torture chamber.
And state-sanctioned torture. Remember now, the state's doing it. The state knows what's going on. The state's letting it happen.
That's right.
And then people wonder why those people come out of those institutions and become mass murderers. That's because they turn them into mass murderers in there. They dehumanize them.
Yeah, you can't keep somebody locked up 24 hours a day
in
human conditions indefinitely without it having some effect.
I always think that it's in the best interest of the California Department of Correction, who is the second most powerful, has the second most powerful agency in state government. It's to their advantage to take regular kind of kids off the street and really make them bad. You know what? You know, because that's an investment. They're always going to be get that prisoner back into their clutches, and they're going to be extracting that $24,000 a rent tax money to keep that individual in a cell. And the whole system is designed to recycle these guys. Why? Because that union, the California Department of Corrections employees, want to keep their union strong. They want to keep increasing it. They want more money. And you can't do it. So you can't do it unless you got bodies.
Right,
like in Pelican Bay, you got 59% of the people in Pelican Bay SHU are Chicanos from L.A. And you got 27% of blacks, okay? And they're keeping them in a cell round the clock. And the guards are living high on the hog because they got good jobs. I think like $30,000 to start or
no,
whatever.
No, they average 58,000 a year.
Way up there.
It's way
know,
up
and
there.
That's a very strong lobby. And just a couple of weeks ago in a magazine, they themselves, the California Correctional Officers Peace Association or whatever they call themselves, they is bragging about how they, in fact, put Governor Wilson over the top and why he got elected. You understand?
They're a very powerful lobby
they get,
in California.
They get all the prisons they want to get built. And they staff them, and they pass out that money, that tainted money from the taxpayers they get to whole other human beings in prison. And now we're talking about not just prison, but we're talking about Pelican Bay, which is a third world concentration camp.
You've been listening to highlights from Pacifica's 1993 Black August special. We now turn to the current prison crisis in California with comments from Los Angeles Times writer Paige St. John. She's been writing on the subject for the past year, and her articles focus on the inhumane conditions in prisons that resulted in a statewide hunger strike that is ongoing at the time of this recording. She begins by summarizing the current situation.
What? Covered this issue since I came to California, which has just been a year, and I've seen this protest, and this strike is the third one that has been organized by these same leaders. They had two in 2011 over the same issues, and in 2011 they gained some ground in changing the rules of solitary confinement and who is put there and how long they are kept. Inmates though say that there have been, you know, not enough changes and very tepid ones at that, and they are pushing for, at minimum, I think, a 5-year limit on the length that someone can be held in solitary. So we've got a number of protest leaders, inmate leaders, who have banded together in California's supermax of supermaxes. It's the solitary confinement units at Pelican Bay State Prison. They called for a hunger strike beginning July 8th. That was answered in 2/3 of the state's prisons, as well as 4 private prisons out of state. More than 30,000 inmates, according to the Corrections Department, began refusing meals that Monday morning. 3 weeks now into the protest, the number of strikers is at 560 roughly, and of that number, about 385 inmates, according to the state, have gone without food for now 22 days. This action is over, it seems, roughly the same exact same conditions that George Jackson was trying to address in the 70s and other inmates have done in the 80s. It's over the conditions of solitary confinement. The concept that you can hold someone indefinitely in that kind of environment, deny them rehabilitation programs, deny them access to sunlight, to air, and to other human contact, essentially. There are other demands over prison food and clothing and race-based punishment, the practice that the corrections department uses in ordering lockdowns and other punishment programs that cover every inmate of that same race. The prisons say that because the gangs are divided along racial lines, but that's one of the core protest items at this point.
Paige St. John comments on the role of race in this hunger strike.
If you go to the main line and look at the prison yards, typically inmates do separate by race, and that's supposed to be the gang activity. The Mexican Mafia, the Nuestra Familia, take the Northern and Southern California Latinos. The Aryan Brotherhood is mostly the white inmates, and the Black Guerrilla Family, the African Americans. But in last fall, November or August, I'm sorry, 2012, the four protest leaders issued what they called an end to hostilities, and this was seen as a rather remarkable document because it called for an end to the fighting between racial and ethnic groups, aka prison gangs, and focused on a common enemy, that being the corrections department and inmates who become informants or snitches and rats, as the manifesto terms them.
St. John comments on the prison administrator's response to this hunger strike.
They steadfastly contend that the protest is organized and led by prison gangs. They will not recognize and talk about it in racial terms. Everything is about prison gangs. They contend that this is a move by gangs to gain greater access to the main line to get the California puts the top gang leaders into solitary confinement in one wing of one prison. They are all housed together. In the theory that that's easier to shut down their communications and their ability to control activity on prison yards throughout the state. So the state argues that to let these men in particular out of solitary would allow them to regain gang control and order murders in prisons, order murders on the streets of California, and run organized crime operations, unfettered.
George Jackson authored two best-selling books while incarcerated, Soledad Brother and Blood in My Eye. Paige St. John explains the price current prisoners pay for reading George Jackson materials.
This is the thing that I just have the hardest time wrapping my head around. You can kill someone else in prison, and you get for that 4 years in solitary confinement. You can own a book that talks about George Jackson and maybe have your name show up on a list of other George Jackson followers, and that will put you in solitary confinement essentially for the rest of your life. So that, and with the Aryan Brotherhood, I'm very familiar with what the crimes are they're associated with. I haven't figured out what the great danger, what the great threat is with George Jackson, because much of this material you study in college, and it would be part of American history and American literature studies, etc. So you'll be very interested to see the kinds of materials that are considered terrorism.
St. John summarizes her experience seeing and interviewing prisoners held in solitary confinement.
Pelican Bay State Prison is the worst of the worst, or the most extreme, as the state administrator I interviewed called it. And then you have Corcoran, California State Prison at Corcoran. It has a SHU, it's called the Security Housing Units.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. During yesterday's meetings at the White House between President Trump and Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky, along with other European leaders, one of the key topics of discussion was establishing future security guarantees for Ukraine. Trump said the U.S. will help with these guarantees, but he has now said no to sending U.S. troops to Ukraine to help enforce a peace deal, despite expressing willingness to do so yesterday. Meanwhile, the Vice President of the European Commission said, and I quote, "Russian President Vladimir Putin cannot be trusted to honor any promise or commitment. Therefore, security guarantees must be strong and credible enough to deter Russia from regrouping and reattacking," end quote. The vice president added that the European Union's security guarantees for Ukraine will include training the country's soldiers and strengthening Ukraine's armed forces and defense ministry. Despite President Trump saying that he sort of set up a meeting between Zelensky and Putin, Russia emphasized today its refusal to commit to a meeting, but stopped short of ruling out further talks. The American Academy of Pediatrics, or AAP, released its updated recommendations for vaccines today, which differ from current CDC recommendations. Currently, the CDC recommends that giving the COVID-19 vaccine to children ages 6 months to 17 years old should be, quote, based on shared clinical decision-making. However, in contrast, the AAP's recommendations are more direct. Their agency says that all children ages 6 through 23 months should receive a COVID-19 vaccine unless they have known allergies to the vaccine or its ingredients. The agency also recommends a single dose of the vaccine for children ages 2 through 18 years old if they are at high risk of COVID-19, are residents of long-term care facilities, have never been vaccinated against COVID-19, or live in a house with people who are at high risk for COVID-19. The AAP also says that the vaccine should be available for this age group even if they are not in these risk groups. It's been noted that throughout the AAP's almost century-long history, it typically has not departed from federal recommendations. However, the AAP indicated that the reason for their departure is because of the CDC's advisory board being, quote, overhauled this year and replaced with individuals who have a history of spreading vaccine misinformation, end quote. Due to the impact of Hurricane Erin, including expected storm surge and waves of over 10 feet, evacuations have been underway along parts of the Outer Banks, a popular vacation spot in North Carolina. The National Weather Service is urging people to stay out of the ocean to avoid deadly surf conditions expected through at least Thursday. Officials in Dare County, North Carolina, which is home to a large portion of the Outer Banks, warned that roads, including the main exit route, could soon be overwhelmed by water. Meanwhile, officials in North Carolina said that at least 60 people had to be rescued from rip currents at Wrightsville Beach, prompting a no-swim order in place through the rest of the week. In addition to North Carolina, beaches as far north as Massachusetts are closed to swimmers due to rough surf. In Atlantic City, New Jersey, officials said beachgoers were restricted to getting knee-deep in the water and were prohibited from using boogie boards. In the D.C. area, as the 30-day federal takeover continues, the D.C. Police Union claims that the takeover has led to an overall 8% decline in crime since the National Guard was deployed. The union also said that robbery is down 46%, carjackings dropped 83%, and violent crime decreased 22%. According to a White House official, 52 arrests were reported last night alone, including an alleged MS-13 gang member with previous convictions for DWI and drug possession. Also, 9 illegal firearms were reportedly seized. In today's weather, it's currently about 70 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour. For WPFW, Washington.